Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora koutou, welcome to Master Toast On Air, your go-to show for all things Toastmasters in the Greater Wellington region. Join us as we spotlight our incredible members diving into their passions, interests and exciting personal projects. This is episode 2. My name is Wayne Buck and I have pleasure in welcoming our amazing member, John Argue.
Thanks, first, Wayne. I'm delighted to be here.
Pleasure to have you, John. So, John, let's start off. Let's kick things off by asking, who is John Argue?
Well, I currently the chair of the Papawai Mangarara Stream Catchment Group. And I took up this role having retired to Papawai Greytown 4 years ago with my wife, Ruth. And I've developed a passion now for looking after the stream and doing the riparian planting along the stream.
Right. Did you mention you were a Toastmaster?
Indeed. Now, the reason why I got into Toastmasters, Wayne, is that I thought, well, we're doing a lot of fundraising. We have to talk to the Greater Wellington Regional Council. We've got to talk to the District Council. And also, you know, I'm talking to the community, our volunteers, and I thought, well, it's about time I brushed up on my communication skills. Having been a builder for the last 40 years, I wasn't really in the position of talking publicly, so Toastmasters has given me that opportunity, and to date, I've really enjoyed it. You know, there's a great vibe at Toastmasters. You have the opportunity to talk about whatever you like, tell a story. You've got a nice, attentive audience who sit there and appreciate what you're saying. And the added bonus, of course, is that while you're speaking, nobody interrupts.
A rare commodity these days. Mm. You talked about some stream. What's that about? Can you talk a bit further about that?
Well, the Papawai Mangarara stream has been noted as a stream of significance in the Wairarapa. Reason being is that it has a wonderful history associated with the Papawai Marae, where the Marae sits on the banks of the stream, and over many years the community living at Papawai used to use the stream for drinking water, for obtaining food, for travel up and down the stream. And one of the reasons that this stream is so wonderful is that it is fed by springs, and they bubble up out of the ground, having come from the Tararua Ranges. And so therefore, this stream, although it's running through farmland, is crystal clear and full of life.
Mm. Well, thanks for that, John, but so what? Why should we care about some stream? What's that about?
Well, I found that the people in the Wairarapa really do care about the environment. And this stream, as I said, is a stream of significance. And it's become a passion of mine because we live very close to it. And I can visit the stream every day. It has a lot of life in it, still left in there. And the creature that really I'm so interested in is the long-finned eel.
Right.
And we have those in the stream, and we can go down there at any time and just tap on the ground, and the eels will come out from underneath the weeds and come up, and will feed out of your hand.
Do you have a pet eel, John? Is that what you're saying?
They're not really pets. I found that it doesn't matter where I am in the stream. If I stand in the water, an eel will just appear from somewhere and come up and sniff around your ankles and want to know what's there, and you might just put your hand down and gently move it away, but it'll come back. So mm-hmm. there's an interaction that we can have with these wild creatures. Mm. And how often do you see that in the wild? It's quite amazing.
That'd
now,
be
these,
cool.
these eels, I'll have to say, have been around for 80 million years. And to me, that makes it worthwhile protecting these creatures. Mm. The Tuatara, likewise, has been around for 80 million years and is highly protected legally, whereas our long-finned eel isn't. And that is something that needs to change, because if we want to see these eels survive for another 80 million years, they need to be protected. We can't just go out there catching them commercially, sending them overseas for somebody to eat over there, wherever, as a luxury dish. We need to make sure that these eels have the best chance of surviving for another 80 million years.
Are you saying that they might be, that there might be a problem with preserving them, or they're becoming endangered or something? What's going on?
Well, they are in decline, and that is why they need this legal protection so that people stop catching them. Anybody can go out and catch these eels, and that's a problem. But the loss of habitat, that's an issue. The river's been dammed, culverts been put in here and there. Water quality is a problem, especially for the long fin. The long fin, unlike a lot of other eel species, they don't like dirty water. They like nice, clean, fresh water. And the other thing that is a problem for the long fin is that they don't breed until they're around 50 or 60 years old.
Ooh.
And they'll only breed once in their life. They get to a certain size, and then they will migrate up to the deep trenches around Tonga and will lay 1 to 20 million eggs, and then they die. It's a one-way trip, and it only happens once in their life. Unlike some of our other native creatures that have been successful, let's say, for example, the piwakawaka, the fantail. Now, you will have seen plenty of those flittering around, and we've got a lot in our garden, and you'd see them all over the country. Now, one of the reasons why they are successful is that they have a quick breeding cycle, and so they can do several clutches in a season. And this is what makes these creatures successful. And we can see that with the predators that are coming to our country. They are very, very fast breeders, and that's why they can be successful. Whereas our long fin, not so, and it's not going to change. You know, it's taken 80 million years for it to get to what it is now. It's not going to suddenly become a fast breeder.
I just want to ask you a question. You said they go to Tonga.
Absolutely.
And what? How do they get back here?
Well, once the eggs hatch, they float back on the currents, and it takes about 7 months, I believe, for the little eel to find its way back to New Zealand. I don't know if I mentioned it before, they are endemic. They're found nowhere else in the world. They're the largest fresh water eel in the world. And so, getting back to your question, Wayne, why do they go to Tonga? I've no idea, but that's where they go, and they believe they breed down in the deep trenches around Tonga.
And mate, that is incredible. So, how did you learn this stuff?
It's easy to find a lot of information about the long fin online, in books, talking to other people who also have a passion for the longfin eel. And so over a period of time, you just pick up information about them. There are a lot of people who have an absolute passion for this fish, this very special fish.
Yeah, John, there's a lot of people, as you know, who talk about the ecology. They talk about climate change. They talk and they talk and they talk. But nothing seems to get done. What can you tell me is being done about saving these long-finned eels or preserving them?
Well, not enough. Every now and again, somebody gets a petition going to get the government of the day to legislate to protect these long-fin eels. And it gets to a certain point, but it never really seems to get across the line where we've got change in the laws of this land to protect this long-finned eel. And I'm not sure why that is, but we should hang our heads in shame, I think, as a country, that we have not got these very special fish protected. Whereas it didn't seem to be any problem protecting trout that were introduced to this country and are legally protected. You have to get a license. You have a limit on how many you can catch. There's a season for catching trout. And the reason why they did all that was because there was money to be made out of legalising and protecting trout.
But there's no money, I'm assuming, in long-finned eels.
Only to catch and harvest them and eat them.
Right.
And so, you know, that's and they're very, very easy to catch. You can just put a net in in a stream and just take them out by the ton. And that's what they did, you know, over a 20 or 30 year period, where they harvested, you know, long finned and other eels throughout the country, and just absolutely decimated the numbers.
That's terrible. John, I've been taking notes about what you've been saying, and I've written down that you were involved in a catchment group. What's that about?
Well, the Papawai Mangarara catchment group was formed about 20 years ago by the community in Papawai, stemming out of from the marae, and so those people who formed this catchment group decided that they needed to clean up the stream, take the willows out, and plant up the riparian margins along the stream.
And so, I don't understand that term riparian. Can you explain that?
Well, the riparian margins on a stream are basically the banks of the stream. And the margins that we have on our Papawai Mangarara stream are defined by fencing that's been put up, and it varies. The margin varies from, say, 3 metres up to 20 metres, depending on the contour of the land. And so, riparian is the margin along any waterway, whether it be a stream, a lake, a river, and that's what the term means. So getting back to what the group did 20 years ago, they had a very enthusiastic bunch of people. They went out and planted up lots of kilometres along the stream, did the fencing, and when Ruth and I moved over after I retired 4 years ago, we got involved with the group. And that's become my thing in my retirement.
So how does the catchment group, how does it interact and relate to the long-finned eel?
You caught me with a question there. How does the catchment group relate to the long-finned eel? In that our catchment group is all about protecting the stream. And so protecting the stream is obviously thinking about the water quality, eradicating the weeds and so on that are in it, and trying to look after the aquatic life that lives in there. And hopefully if we, over a period of time, we should be able to get that aquatic life coming back into the stream and have a good, healthy stream. That's right. The idea.
So if, can I ask you a question, John? Let's say you live nearby, and this could be the first time you heard about this catchment group. How would you be able to become involved to stop the talk fest and get your hands dirty doing something practical?
Well, for anybody in the Wairarapa who wants to get involved in doing some conservation work and especially working around waterways, the best thing to do is to contact the Wairarapa Catchment Collective. It's they shorten it to WCC, Wairarapa Catchment Collective. Go online, just type that into the search bar. Their site comes up. It's got a lot of information, tells you how to get in touch with them. And from there, you can join a catchment group that's some near where you live and get involved in looking after our waterways in the Wairarapa. So this group is less than a year old. It's well set up, it's well resourced, and they're absolutely looking for as many people as possible to get involved in our catchment groups through the Wairarapa.
Now, John, this is a rural community here. There's a lot of farmers out there. What would you say, what could they do on their own property? What practical things could they do to help out the quality of any stream, any waterways that run through their property?
First of all, fence them and give a decent margin. Not put a fence right next to the water, but put the margin at least the minimum of 5 metres. If you can, make it 10 metres and create that margin along the streams, and then get involved or contact the local catchment group and get them along to plant along those margins. And that's a very easy and practical way for farmers to help in this, in our drive to look after our waterways.
Thanks, John. That sounds expensive for fencing, maybe, but what would farmers plant? What's a smart thing to plant around waterways?
Well, what I advocate for waterways are really two plants. One is the Carex sceptre, which it's a sedge. It's a sedge, which is like a big grass. Its Māori name is pukio. You can buy these plants for very little, about $1.70 each, and they grow very quickly. They're recommended by Greater Wellington for putting along our waterways. They smother the ground very quickly and therefore prevent other weeds coming through. So that's the first part. And then the other plant that's cheap to buy, resilient, and is excellent for a riparian planting is Mānuka. Now, both these plants are cheap to buy, they're fast-growing, they're resilient, but also the magic about them is that they are able to extract the nitrogen out of the ground. So this is very important to reduce the amount of nitrogen getting into the waterway, is to have plants that will take up that nitrogen so it does not get into the waterway.
Right.
Too much nitrogen in the waterway is bad for the waterway. It just increases the amount of weed growing, and it can be toxic to the aquatic life if there's too much of it. So the other thing about that I'd like to say about Mānuka, it's a nursery plant. It's what nature does when it colonises a new area, it Manuka will grow, it grows quickly, and all our other big natives, the Tota, the Remus, the canopy trees, will grow up through it. And look, we may not necessarily see that in our lifetime, but the thing is, it's fun to plant these things and see them grow quickly. It's really cool. And knowing that and as time goes by, that those big trees will come. There are seed banks in the ground, and they will self-germinate.
If you're a farmer, you call on the catchment group, right? You fence the river or the stream. You call the catchment group. Will they help in the planting? If you buy the plants, will they help in the planting? Because you need manpower, right? If you've got a kilometre of stream running through, that could take a long time to plant. Would they help?
The farmers?
Would the catchment group help the farmer?
That's what the catchment group's all about, is going on to anyone's land, as long as they have permission. They just can't bowl in there. You get the permission, and that's what we do. We're all volunteers, and we have maybe four or five planting days during the winter. And with 20 people planting, you can put 1,000 plants in the ground in 2 hours. If you're well organised, you've got the spades, you've got the plants there ready to go, and that's what we do. We do a two-hour stint, and there's 800 to up to 1,000 plants, depending on how many people are there. Just suddenly, it just magically changes.
I would love to be involved in something like that. I think you'd feel good that you've done something practical for the environment.
And not only that, Wayne, but actually being out there planting is wonderful for your mental health. I know it's good for my mental health. It just feels good. It feels like you're doing the right sort of thing. And you just get the benefit of seeing these plants grow. And we've just had the most amazing spring, and plants are just rocketing away at the moment.
That sounds like a positive double whammy to me. Where could the farmer buy the plants from? Is there any...
Well, that's up to us. That's what we do. As a catchment group, we source the plants and we source the money. You know, Greater Wellington are wonderful for helping to fund groups, and Greytown Lands Trust, they help, and the District Council, South Wyre Rapid District Council, are pitched in for us. People give donations, and so, you know, we get money and we spend it. And we spend it on plants. We spend it on plants and get the plants in the ground.
Yeah. Taking that, it requires someone to take that step forward, doesn't it? And then they will help to meet the need. It's been amazing speaking to you today, John. Is there anything else that you want to add before we wrap up today's podcast?
Only to say that if you have a feeling that you want to help the environment, get in touch with the Wyre Rapid Catchment Collective and get involved in a group. If you want to do something in your own property, pop down to Norfolk Road Nursery. They have a whole swag of native plants, and you can make a start on your own property putting natives in. And I'm an absolute believer that, you know, the country should not be looking at introduced plants. We should be just planting native.
Thank you very much, John. That is amazing. It's people like you make this world a better place. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your generosity in coming here today. Well, that was episode 2 of Master Toast on Air, presented by community group Toastmasters Wyre Rapid in New Zealand. Whether you're looking to improve public speaking, develop leadership abilities, or simply meet new people, amazing people like John here, Toastmasters offers a welcoming environment for everyone. Now that you've had a taste of Master Toast on Air, why not check out the live meetings? To check out more, Look at our Toastmasters Warrior Facebook page. Haere ra, ka kite anō.